links? Do the kids even know what the internet used to be like, my friends? You used to put links to other websites on your website.
I think they still do.
This is Marina Abramović, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra Creative Community Radio.
Beautiful.
Have a good day.
You can go there with your family, and you can meet new friends in the library. When you're at the library, you can read lots of books, and you can find any book. There are lots of Dog Man books, which are my favorite books of all. When I go to the library, I read them, and that's why I like the library.
I'm also on a radio show at the library, and there was also a video making workshop that I did, and I did some animation, and I made a lot of new friends, and I laughed a lot, and it was really fun. My main reason of coming here is because it's books. Of course, it's a library, and I really like the wide selection of books, and they have computers and all sorts of stuff. They also recently did a mural painting thing where they painted the computer room in the back, and I got to be a part of that, and it was really fun. It looks really cool now, and I just really appreciate the library for being here. And if I had to choose between this library and any other one to go to, I would choose this one. I really like the Hudson Area Library, and I hope that it stays running for as long as I live or maybe even longer, because I know a bunch of people that love to read.
Do you like a little ukulele? Ukuleles Unleashed is broadcast live from the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Carmen Borgia hosts the live segment, and John Sturman spins the finest ukulele music from every nook and cranny of our crazy old earth. So, if you're like me and you like a little ukulele, tune in to Ukuleles Unleashed on WGXC 90.7 FM the third Tuesday of every month from 8 to 10 p.m. or find us later in the archive at WGXC.org. Hear Ukuleles Unleashed, Tuesday, March 19th from 8 to 10 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hawkeye Resilience Advisors, a full-service security, risk, and crisis management company helping local organizations be prepared before, during, and after crises strike. Hawkeye Resilience helps people make plans before something goes wrong. Business resilience promotes community resilience. For more information, visit HawkeyeResilience.com or call 518-573-9183.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Celia Graham of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
Dropping bombs and bread on Gaza. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Dramatic images of U.S. airdrops of food into the Gaza Strip made headlines in recent days. The U.S. Air Force and the Royal Jordanian Air Force dropped over 70,000 meals in total along the Gaza coastline and in northern Gaza, amounting to a fraction of what's needed on an ongoing basis there. While the U.S. has been airdropping food, it's also been delivering bombs to Israel to be dropped on Gaza as well. The Washington Post revealed this week the Biden administration's conducted more than 100 separate weapons transfers to Israel over the last 5 months, with thousands of so-called precision-guided munitions, bombs, and more, while skirting legally required reports to Congress.
But it is absurd and hypocritical to publicly profess horror at Netanyahu's inhumane war.
Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders said on the Senate floor Wednesday, referring to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
While at the same time, as we say how terrible it is, how awful Netanyahu is, at the same time, we ship tens of thousands of bombs to his army. It is absurd to criticize Netanyahu's war in one breath and provide him another $10 billion to continue that war in the next.
Sanders reportedly met privately with President Biden this week. Individual senators have significant power to delay legislation, including foreign military aid, but only if a senator actually learns about a proposed arms sale in advance. As the Washington Post reported, quote, in the case of the 100 other transactions known in government speak as foreign military sales or FMS, the weapons transfers were processed without any public debate because each fell under a specific dollar amount that requires the executive branch to individually notify Congress, unquote. Josh Paul knows a lot about U.S. arms sales to Israel. He worked for over 11 years at the State Department, most recently as director in the Bureau of Political Military Affairs, overseeing international arms deals. He resigned in October, citing the U.S.'s, quote, blind support, unquote, for Israel during its assault on Gaza.
The president continues to facilitate the flow of arms to Israel, despite a change in tone.
Josh Paul said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour,
we have certainly heard the administration call for more humanitarian assistance for, you know, at least a temporary ceasefire. But at the same time, it continues to provide the arms that enable Israel to continue its operations.
On February 8th, President Biden issued a national security memorandum, NSM 20, reminding government agencies of their legal requirements regarding these official arms transfers. A new report from Refugees International, titled Siege and Starvation, How Israel Obstructs Aid to Gaza, includes the recommendation, quote, given the widespread indications of systematic Israeli violations of international humanitarian law, IHL, which even the president has characterized as indiscriminate and over the top, the Biden administration should pause further offensive security assistance to Israel pending a thorough review of the credibility of Israel's adherence to IHL as mandated by NSM 20, unquote. Refugees International President Jeremy Kleindike is a former top USAID official where he ran the Obama administration's Office of U.S. Foreign Disaster Assistance and coordinated the Biden administration's international COVID response. He said this week on social media, quote, Biden admin has had the reports predicting looming famine for 2.5 months. Where was the urgency? What did they do to pressure, not plead with, Bibi to drastically ramp up humanitarian access? Why the change in tone only now? And why still no use of U.S. leverage? Unquote. Not only is Israel clearly in violation of international humanitarian law, which alone should be enough to stop the flow of arms and ammunition from the U.S., Israel's been found to be plausibly responsible for genocide in Gaza in a preliminary ruling from the International Court of Justice in The Hague. South Africa, which brought the case to the World Court, has just asked the court to take additional emergency measures, stating, quote, the threat of all-out famine has now materialized. The court needs to act now to stop the imminent tragedy, unquote. Josh Paul is in touch with State Department staffers who still work on arms transfers to Israel.
I mean, I'm still hearing from people I had not heard from previously, to be clear, who are saying that, you know, this is not working. I feel sick to my stomach of being involved in this. And I, you know, I'm trying to do to make changes, and it's just not working. I had several of those conversations just in the last week with people I've not spoken to before on this issue. So I think the internal pressure, the internal disgust, frankly, is still there.
Josh Paul is now working with Democracy for the Arab World Now, or DAWN. In a statement, he said, quote, "No number of airdrop pallets can come close to the relief that Gaza needs most, an end to Israel's bombardment, conducted with American weapons paid for by American dollars. The U.S. has immense leverage to push Israel to agree to a ceasefire and open wide the gates of Gaza so humanitarian assistance can flow in," he said. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXE sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxe.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXE believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXE is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. All the candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXE morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Would you like to play a game? It's an obscure game, one that's only played around these parts. The locals, they like to call it Heartball. But you can also call it Heartball. No, not Hardball, dummy. Heartball, like that chewy red thing in your chest? You'll find out why we call it Heartball once we start playing. It's a sport of sorts, but not just a sport, but four sports. Call it a ritual. A ritual to bring the best of luck to the local sports teams, which are dear to our hearts. Heartball is played once a year, and it is played so that football may prosper, hockey too, and that baseball and lacrosse and all of our crops of sports may be bountiful and go swimmingly. In this town, sports is not merely a game. Sports is the major industry. From the day you are born into sports. We cut the grass in the stadiums, make and sell the merch, sew the uniforms, paint the uprights, and pour the beers. All of our factories, plants, and mines have all been repurposed to service our professional sports teams, leagues, arenas, and bar and grills that surround them. Nothing frivolous about it. Here, sports is life. How can such a small town have so many sports? Is it because we pray with all our hearts? No. It's because we play Heartball.
Enough!
So let's play Heartball. I pick you up at 11 to midnight. We look at the stars, get a Frosty from Wendy's. It builds trust. We're friends. Now we head over to the old St. Joseph Cemetery, where Heartball is played in the graveyard, out by the edges where the trees, you know, the bunch of thin white ones that look like tree ghosts when the moon bounces off them, here the game will begin. Wait, did you see that? By these trees there are children, a whole crowd of preteens. Awfully late for children. They don't look so hot. Not that I ever think little kids look hot, but not just not hot, but downright ghoulish they look. Sad-faced little demons, and they won't stop staring at us. They're coming closer. Hey, what do you kids want? Get back! One of them grabs a brick and starts kicking you with it. A little girl gives you a DDT, and a mob of brats surround us with their silent, creepy faces. Run.
Run.
The goth children break into a mass hiccup of giggles as they are now playing a game called Chase, where they run behind trying to kill us, and we run in front trying to survive. I see a mausoleum up ahead with an open door. We have to go in there and hide. Spiders, rats, but we're safe for now at least. Here, look, there are goalie pads in here. Add them to your items. They will protect your shins. Armor. But the little ones have circled our wagon. They know we're in here. A kid's crowbar starts wrenching the door open. There's no time. Let's quick get the lid off this coffin and hide inside. They will never find us in here. Children never look in coffins. Huh? There's no body in this coffin. There's no bottom either. From your items, select flashlight and shine it down into the casket hole. There's a rope ladder down there. There is no coffin in this coffin at all. It's just a crypt concealing a secret passageway to an underground tunnel below. Amazing and fantastic the things we might find down there, but also terror. Do we dare? We have no choice. The children are closing in. We are climbing into the womb of the tomb, down the ladder. Don't forget to close the casket lid to seal us in. We are descending now into a pitch black, damp, and dripping sub-cemetery. At the bottom now, I see we are at the beginning of a long concrete cobweb corridor with no corners. Let's press on and see if we can find a back way out of here. The Dollar General flashlight is no match for the utter blackness in front of us. Hey, have you noticed how the dark nothingness is slowly turning more orange? An orange fog? Oranger as we go. Oh dang, look, a skeleton. It looks like the skeleton of someone who doesn't like sports. A poet or a medievalist, perhaps. Here, let's grab one leg bone each. Add it to our items. Category, weapons. The orange fog is getting thicker. I can't see. I'm sticking my bone out ahead of me, in case something is in front of us. Oh, stop. My bone. It just hit something hard. It must be a wall. Oh, great, there's no way out. I'm reaching my hand out forward and it's not a wall, it's a door. Look how the orange cloud comes out up from under it. Get your bone ready, my friend. Ready? I'm opening the door. Behind the door, it's a large room. What is this place? I guess it's some sort of giant industrial manufacturing chamber. No windows, no doors. There are candles that rhythmically extinguish, then reignite as if they are breathing. They illuminate the rusty bellies of creaky, shaking tanks, puttering out puffs of smoke. Yuck. Look at that lump of strawberry jelly on top of an old book about demonology and chaos magic. Wait, that's not strawberry jelly. It's raspberry. Let's eat it. A skill token. Strength. At first I thought the sound was thunder and lightning on the outside world above us, but now I realize that's the sound of bowling balls rolling down an alley, crashing into the pins. We must be underneath Focaccio's lanes. Look, see how the bowling balls are dropping down into this room after every roll? They're landing in a chute, which sends the balls through a loop and down into tubes of bubbling water. Then the balls shoot out the bottom, which triggers the firing of pistons that force orange smog into vials. A pneumatic hose sucks up the bowling balls and the corkstop beakers of orange, sending them up two different channels. The balls get sucked back up into the ball return, and the fog gets injected into a big reactor connected to a series of pipes. This whole contraption seems to be processing this unnatural fog, then pumping it into these old pipes. Oh, whoa. You need the label on these pipes. The elementary school? The police station? Hotel Niagara? This orange fog is being pumped throughout the entire city. Let's try and find a way out of here. Maybe up the elevator shaft. But be careful, I just saw a friggin' scorpion. As we cross the treacherous subterraneous factory floor, I see a great number of votive candles in a semicircle. Look, over there. Something creepy. An altar. The candles uplight a portrait. Hey, I know this guy. Gurn Naglers. He was the Niagara Falls Gold Gloves boxing champion and an axe murderer. He was convicted of killing his wife and their three other wives. At the base of the altar, there's a heart-shaped box with a Buffalo Bills sticker on it. Shh! Hey! The service elevator is slowly lowering into the room. Someone's coming down. Quick! Hide behind those turbine things. Who is it? I see four people. It looks like it's why it's called Rodeo Andes. From the Gazio's Lanes, it's right. And tonight's special guest, wrestling legend Brett the Hitman Hart. They are all here to play
Hart. Hello, I'm Tony Papp. I make food down at Focaccio's Lanes, but I also just got a job working over at the casino. Anyway, welcome to Hotball 22. Now is the time in Hotball where we rip out your heart and we play with it. Then we put it in that little heart-shaped box over there in honor of our spiritual leader, Gurn Naglers, and to appease the great orange cloud. A sacrifice, if you will, for all the blessings that this extraterrestrial haze has bestowed upon us. Ever since its arrival in Niagara Falls, all of our sports teams have been real good, lifting up the morale of the town, bringing in an increased economy, you know, a good economy. It has closed the gender-based income gap. Figured out all the social justice stuff. Now, let's kill you real violently in order to make sure that all of this good fortune continues. Okay.
Oh, what? You haven't realized? You've been playing Hartball this entire time. How's your heart? Is it racing? Is it rolling? I'd love to find out. Here, let me touch it. Why are you backing away? You can't go back. Look behind you. The child fighters have caught up to us, blocking the way out. Think of it this way. You are also lucky. You are chosen. Only one outsider a year gets to play hardball. And it's the last game they ever play. Now, come on. We're pals. Come over here. I'm gonna kill you. Don't you know that in a town where sports is life, sports must be death also? Where sports is life, sports must be death also.
Alright, so Rodeo and Anthony's, they're just gonna hold your arms down like this, okay? Get that arm. Okay, now, whoa, look out. From off the top rope, Brett the Hitman Hart. Damn! Oh, okay, Tony, here, come here. We got this. Grab that wooden spoon and just scoop out that heart. Scoop that organ right up and out. Stop screaming! Stop screaming! No!
what I have here. Your beating heart, torn from your body as a gift to the mist. Now we'll just place it inside this heart-shaped box, close it, now watch as I reopen it. It's gone. Why is that? Game modifier, Heartfall is just a prank. Yes, a prank. Go on, touch your chest. There's no blood, no wound. Your heart's still in there, beating. I mean, come on, how could you have kept listening if your heart was chopped off at the 1203 mark of the story? But the real twist, the prank is that it's not actually a prank at all. That's the prank. That's not your heart inside of you. We replaced it with a robot heart. Or a rat. No, just kidding. It's a prank. But it's a prank of a prank in a prank of a prank. And it will just go on like that forever in your head. You, never knowing what's real and what's prank, until your sanity levels are reduced to zero, and the Og Mist will feast on your lunacy, bringing us wealth, love, riches, and the Super Bowl.
Game over.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
And start the slideshow going. People are just arriving back from lunch. Sure. We are hearing NAISA Radio, Radio NISA, coming to you from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And this presentation is Sound Spiral in Dual Realities with Linda Rogers, Christine Caulfield, and Daz Disley on deck. And no, you know what, guys? I'm just going to quit Skype and Skype you back, okay? Because they're part of my co-presenters who are standing by in the UK.
Hello.
Well,
Chrissy
can't sit down because
she's going to... So listening to us right now on NAISA Radio, you're listening to our sound check. And so we'll be with you momentarily. We're about to begin shortly.
Okay.
With Linda Rogers' session on her work with Second Life.
Right. So on the screen behind me, you see Second Life. And I have some slides here. And I thought I would just start off by saying that I'm Linda Rogers from Toronto, and I'm Kate Miranda in Second Life. And I wanted to ask people, just a show of hands, how many people know about virtual reality or have used virtual reality in your performance. So a fair number, and that's what I guessed, so I didn't figure I had to do a whole ton of introductions. When we think about virtual reality as a transmission channel, the how to do it's are probably all known to the sound artists here, that, you know, Winamp, SAM, broadcast to a shoutcast server, but the whys somehow sometimes are not apparent to people who only browse the surface. When people think about doing things on the internet at large, they think about making a ton of money. Well, that's not going to happen. Promote to millions of users. Well, Second Life virtual reality, whether we're talking Second Life or other virtual reality platforms, it's fairly small. And if we're looking for great sound quality, well, that's not there now. It's MP3. It's not bad quality anymore. It used to be, but it's pretty reliable. But it's what you get on a shoutcast server. If you want to have fun and explore new technologies, and Kate Miranda in Second Life, and can probably put that.
Thank you.
We got a little slow start, so we're a little behind. I think we need it so that we can talk to people back and forth. I'm not sure. I'm looking for the call history. Hey, Chrissy, can you maybe call me because I'm not finding the group? Do you have that group call still?
Yes, I'm so scared. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that.
Can you call me? I can hear you, but I can't see you yet.
Okay. Oh, no.
No, I'm going to quit, and I'm going to...
Okay, I'll close down second line station.
Okay. Quit, and then I'm going to open it up again. It was great. Yes, it was great fun yesterday because, you know, we had Chrissy with all her technical knowledge, and we couldn't figure out Skype. It was great. So let me see. I'm gonna call Gaz. Hi, Gaz. Okay, so I'm wanting to add Chrissy to this conversation. Do you know how to do that? Like, the group has disappeared on me. The Daz. Wait a minute. He said, here we go. Never mind. I'm hanging up. Stop that call. Here we are. Okay. Call both of these guys. Okay. Okay, so everyone is here and can hear you. So Chrissy is our wonderful artist today, and Daz is executive director of the Sound Spiral Project. So I know we're really short on time. So Chris, do you want to give a brief talk about your work, and then we'll ask Daz to talk maybe 2 minutes about the sound spiral, and people who want to stay a little bit after can ask questions.
The whole idea of something based on intermittent effects, as you said at the start, it's sort of based on some old words that they're buying herself or Byron, bought by her father, and because she was quite a volatile character, which she bought from her father. She worked a lot with Carl's package of the sound on an analytical engine and programming for that. And in her writing, she actually the use of computers for music making, which I found very interesting. But those are part of the writings they used in the piece. So most of the piece is based on her as a precursor to modern computing and also as a precursor to modern computer-based music, which is something I did quite a lot of. So I like to do it with live performance. So the original piece was in Who's Master Piece. It's on my Bandcamp page if you want to go listen to that. Four things for 40 minutes. And I stripped it down for sample vinyl to try and to what I could play live while still keeping the spirit of the whole thing and keeping all the examples that I got. Sounds were all recorded at the Museum of Computing in Bletchley Park in England. And there were some lovely old computers in there, and they were very kind of to go around there with a microphone. And because they're card readers, tape readers, teletypes, printers, all those published, those sorts of things. So that's all sounds you heard there recorded off all the computers. So that was sort of the theme of Ada's there, as the sort of mother of computing, really, and computer music.
So, Daz, Chris was playing on the second screen, I was showing some wonderful photos that you have of the Sound Spiral project. I think I gave a little bit of background to people who were here earlier that it was the 2012 Olympic cultural project. So that's about all they know.
Separate to the normal arrangement of the style of composition.
Not to interrupt, but the software that you wrote, being publicly funded, is open source software, free for download, right?
Yeah, it's not open source, but it's also because of various SDKs and NDAs and all that stuff. You can download the VST in Windows, use it freely as applied. It's a top-down map, and the speed positions are movable such that you can recreate pretty much any configuration of speakers to 64 speakers. And on that, you can then drop 64 sound sources and move them around. And it enables you to do ridiculous things like 7.1 or something crazy like 19.3. You can make them all at the same time. It's still a beta. It's been running in this file now. It's fine for us. So yeah, if you want to download it, website, link in this sort of thing, play with it. See how you get on.
Darren's handing out sheets now, all the links.
So yeah, I mean, if that, it costs enough to hardware, why not go there for some additional efforts of getting high-end or academic software when all you want is throw a bit of a sound left and a bit over there? Let's make it as easy as we can and as cheap as we can on the software side, so that if in the future you're doing a grant application to put together a system in a museum or university, it brings a challenge.
Well, it's really exciting to hear Christine's piece, the world premiere in Second Life, but I kept on thinking, oh, this would just be wonderful with those 48 banks of speakers all around me. And so I think for you guys, the virtual participation was not about the sound at all, but it was about a dissemination of what you were doing and the project that you had created. That, you know, the remarkable thing is that it doesn't take, as you say, it doesn't take a PhD in sound engineering to be able to use the sound spiral. People that have a normal, you know, musical proficiency with technology can use the sound spiral for their festival or their sound art project. So that's great. So I think people are starting to go, it's coffee break time here.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we better let them go and grab their coffee before the next session. And thank you so much, guys, for joining. And thank you, Chrissy. You know, wonderful
actually
playing.
Don't hang up yet.
Okay.
We can run a little bit and maybe get some questions from our audience here.
There's questions here.
Okay.
Right here? Right
here. Just a couple questions to ask. Did you ever get to Audium in San Francisco? What you're proposing here is reminiscent of. It's 147 speakers. It's been going since the 70s. Were you aware of that?
Yeah,
it's been there since the 70s. There's a reason why I like what you're doing, in the sense that you're taking a real space which is immersive. Yes, I got that right.
Yeah.
And then you're applying it to a virtual space like Second Life. But I wondered if you would consider using the binaural cues as opposed to what we're experiencing here.
We've got a whole kind of interesting question with that. Stereo is great, we've got this notion of fanning, moving sound to put the space between left and right. Is that really valid? You've got speakers that are not exactly in the normal position. Is that really valid? Just because only your head. How does the head-related transfer function cope with being played in that sort of system? So really,
and there's ambisonics to consider as well, too, just two
things. Yeah, exactly.
Doing the math, you know.
All those things from that point of view are brilliant. Great ideas, way beyond my ability to code software or something, especially in the short time frame we had to get the sound spiral up and running. So, really, my point of view is
It's twofold. Initially, the software is expensive, right? Let's push the sound in this place. Great. Got another 100 tracks to deal with. Well, this track over there, can we get 8% of the way in there without doing the thing transfer a bunch more exotic? But also, the second part is now we've got the infrastructure of the hardware software in place. If someone wants to bring that experiment to us, we're all for it. What are the rules for having speakers overhead? We don't know what stereo rules are for meeting a stereo. We're starting to understand more about regular 5.1 and 6 channel as the hardware is getting cheaper. Great, you've now got 52 speakers, four subwoofers. How are you going to handle that? Those questions are over to the office community now because we've created the hardware base. That's an open question as to what people now want to do with the system that is.
Just as a quick follow-up, is we've had huge discussions, especially in some of the work I've done at Banff, Banff Center, in about the head relay transfer function. And I think that's a moot point. I think we're getting excited over anything. It's important, yes. But I think it's a question of a narrative structure for sound. We've been dealing with stereo, and when multi-tracking came in, then we have producers who are able to, using headphones, curiously enough, like Daniel Lau. Wow. And using headphones to create a very immersive experience, and yet it sounded great coming over regular speakers. And they weren't too caught up. What they were interested in was the narrative of what they were presenting, and I wondered if that might be a door opening to a bigger discussion. Because I think we get a little. I like the idea of what you're doing, and some of these experiments have gone on. Like I mentioned in the Bay Area back in the 70s, you might want to just take a look into it historically. That's all. But the thing is that they didn't do there is what you're doing here is you're transferring it into a virtual space. And that's
interesting. From Chris's mind, really, Linda's, much to my surprise, when, hang on a second, we built this crazy, crazy thing, there's another version of it that exists that people having concerts in.
Audience has been going, I'll direct it to you. I'll send you an email or something like that. It's been going. The first concerts happened in 1965, and then they built a space. There's something like 147 speakers. It seats about 50 people.
And
they have concerts every week.
Like.
Well, it's different.
I think what Des is saying is that the real life sound spiral was entirely his doing, and it was Chrissy and me that had the idea of a virtual version. Chrissy was one of the founding members of Music Island, dating back to our first discussions in 2006 before the 2007 opening. So we've been friends for a long time.
I think what you're doing is incredible is the fact that it's inflatable. I think that's wonderful. It reminded me of another piece that, again, was in Britain. They did these inflatable spaces you could walk through. And they were different colors, but they had no sound in it. But unfortunately, one of them blew away, got off its moorings, and somebody got hurt.
Yeah, risk assessments, engineering.
And that's what I want to ask you about. How did you pull this off, right? Because there was a big to-do about that.
Well, it took 3 years to get from the initial idea to the funding coming through. And the structure was built by a hotel company, who worked a lot of they don't put hot air balloons in Europe, but they also work for military and do kind of exotic helium balloons and stratospheric stuff. We thought, well, actually, yeah, we don't want this thing to fly away. These people know how to make things fly. They damn well should know how to make things not fly. And so they worked through all the usual kind of aerospace engineering kind of things to figure out all these things like wind loading. And what we need to do is tie it down to keep it safe, how to do risk assessment. And all that stuff. Because key for us was this is one van of equipment. We want to be able to drop it anywhere and have it up and running in about 2 hours time frame. And so we worked with them to figure out the design and all the boring stuff about having fireproof fabrics and making sure all the cables are internal to the building. It means that we can literally turn up the van, throw the thing out, inflate it, take it down, and after that, we put the floor in and go around, and all the speakers are Velcro mounted. So on my own, in about 30 minutes, I get all the speakers installed in the room, and then it's just a case of plugging the computers in, and off we go. So the whole thing, the reason it took so long to get from initial idea to delivery method was so that we could ensure that, yeah, it's going to work. Because it was a lot of money, and like you, it's all, from the Philadelphia Arts Council, grassroots kind of stuff. And we knew that we were going to be hoovering up money that could be going to individual artists to kickstart their careers. And but part of that was ensuring that it would have a lifespan, it would say they would do exactly what it says it would do. And it wasn't going to be a threat to people, either through fire, through trip hazards, through blown away, even to the extent of being too loud. For example, we've specified 25-watt speakers, but only 10 watts per channel for the amplifier. We can't ever drive our speakers into distortion, and therefore it opens up the whole world of safely working with children. If everything goes wrong on the computer side of the thing, we're not going to be flying other people's ears. And that for me is as important as giving them that experience of being able to get into this kind of immersive sonic environment.
I should add that Daz made sure that the Second Life virtual sound spiral was also tied down well with sandbags and met the risk assessment because we didn't want it falling on any avatar's heads. And I'm getting the, we have to go off the air on the radio broadcast here, Daz, because we've got something else queued up to start, so.
That's what happened.
I'd like to thank Linda Rogers and company, Daz and Chrissy Caulfield, and also Chrissy for her performance on Second Life that came to listeners on NASA Radio and WGXC in the New York state area through the Wave Farm. And we're going to take a break for 15 minutes and then reset for our last session of the afternoon. And with it'll be hosted by John Kammerbar, but we'll have David Strang, Aaron Sexton, and Don Hill. And then 8 p.m. tonight is the next TransX concert.
All right, I'm Tom Rowe. But now we are joined in the studio here in Acre with Sean Cronin, who leads or helps put together the weekly tone singing workshop at Joust in Catskill. I think it's on Mondays?
It's on Monday nights at 7:30
p.m. And I guess, the question for probably many of our listeners is what exactly is tone singing?
Well,